And welcome to episode 12, season 3 of Rainbow Bridge Connection. I'm Kayla. And I know I promised you a couple episodes ago that I was going to have a couple guests lined up, and I do. So the last episode you guys heard, I had a guest, and now I have another amazing guest. I know I say it every time, but it's true. Anybody who comes on here, you guys know, is great and amazing. So I have Melanie Savage. She's a registered social worker in community mental health, and she's in Ottawa, Ontario, Canada, correct?
I am, yeah.
Yay! Every time I get so nervous, I say every single time I ask the person beforehand, how do you want me to introduce you? I write down notes, and then I think, okay, I'm going to remember these notes. Like, I'm going to remember the shorthand, and I never do. So I'm glad I said it right. Hi, Melanie.
Hey, thanks so much for inviting me and for the opportunity. I'm super pumped.
Of course. We're happy to have you. So what did you want to talk? I think you guys are going to really dig this episode because it's not our typical stuff. And I think this is awesome. So do you want to start off by telling me a little bit about your backstory, what brought you to where you are, and what you're hoping to do to change the future?
Yes, buckle up. Okay, it's a long one. So in November 2021, I had to say goodbye to my soul cat, Tika. Had her for just shy of 13 years. I actually adopted her when I moved out on my own for the very first time. So she basically was a part of all the firsts in adulthood and has gone through a lot of different things with me. And prior to her loss, I hadn't really experienced a lot of loss in my life. There wasn't a lot of death. There wasn't a lot of grieving and that kind of thing. And so I didn't really have much of a blueprint. And so I just knew, and I would joke about this all the time with family and friends, was, you know, when Tika dies, I'm going to need a ton of therapy. Like, this is going to be bad. And then unfortunately it happened, and it really was as bad as I thought it was going to be, except worse. Mm-hmm. And so I tried to find therapists in my city to get some support. But when I looked, there was no one that really specifically identified pet loss. And so I was like, okay, well, that's what I really need, and I can't find it. So what do I do? And then I kind of went through this internalizing almost shame and embarrassment that as a social worker, I couldn't figure it out for myself. I didn't have the skills. I didn't have the knowledge. It wasn't something that was a part of my post-secondary education. And so I was lost. I was embarrassed. And I just knew that I really wanted to lean into the experience. She was the most important thing in my life, outside of, you know, family and friends. But she had such a significant presence. And so I just started looking up things online, and I found some books, I found some journals, I resorted to, you know, podcasts and social media pages, and I just started feeling some level of connection, and I felt acknowledged in that capacity. And so that's kind of where it started. And so, you know, I developed my own kind of rituals and practices where, you know, maybe the mainstream population might think I'm a little woohoo. but you know, in my phone, for example, I have a note page that says, you know, letters to Tika. And it was just one way to maintain that relationship. I'm big on continuing bonds. Mm. And so, you know, it was one of the ways that I was able to process a lot of the feelings that I didn't necessarily feel comfortable sharing with other people, or didn't know how to share without worrying people. Right. And so, you know, that was a big source of comfort for me. And, you know, around the 4.5 month mark, I adopted Winston. And that was almost the first point in my journey where I allowed myself to experience grief and joy simultaneously. I really, really struggled with that after Tika died. I had a lot of guilt, and when I adopted him, it was like, poof, I could experience joy and I didn't feel bad about it because he was just, I just loved him right away. And so I worked with him and helped him kind of navigate his new life here, and took us a little bit to really bond. He was very skittish and very timid and just afraid of life. And so, you know, we made our way, and unfortunately, in April this year, he got really, really sick very suddenly. And despite, you know, completing almost every test and doing everything I could, there was just no solution that was in reach. And so I had to say goodbye. I knew it was the kindest thing that I could have done for him, right? And so now I'm back at going through that journey with another animal and noticing how different it is. It feels different, it looks different. And so trying to navigate that. And I think throughout my experience, what I've noticed is the significant lack of in social work practice for acknowledging the human animal bond, and how needed it is. Because in my line of work in community mental health, I work with marginalized populations who have animals, and those animals are often the most important relationship that they have. They may not have, you know, family or trusted friends, but you can bet that that animal is always there for them. And so they'll do whatever it takes for that animal. And I think as social workers, we owe it to them to acknowledge that relationship. And so I noticed that my practice changed, how I approached working with folks changed. I was engaging with their animals more, since a lot of my work was in their home, and asking questions about their relationship and connecting them to resources, to demonstrate that I see how profound that relationship is. And so, you know, that was the beginning of the shift. And then in, you know, my post-secondary studies, for my master's, a lot of my assignments have been revolving around the human animal bond. My MSW placement that's starting in the fall is surrounding the human animal bond. And so ultimately, what I'd really like to be able to do once I graduate is open private practice and predominantly focus on supporting individuals with animal bereavement counseling.
That's amazing. That's amazing. We've talked about that before a couple of times on our, you know, on a couple episodes, the disparities that we have. But me and her had a conversation off camera just a little bit about, you know, what she's noticed and the different stuff. And you had mentioned that there's a huge disparity in, you know, Canada in terms of the companion animal grief. Did you want to talk a little bit about what you're seeing? And I know you had brought up that you had to actually like kind of get your own resources.
Through the entire journey so far, I've been really privileged of finding a few like-minded professionals across the country who really, really have a passion for the human-animal bond. And so some of them are veterinary social workers. And it's been really cool to hear how they've been in the industry for a little bit, working in vet clinics, for example. And seeing all the hard work to try and bring this more to the forefront. And so that was really motivating for me in terms of wanting to take the next step in exploring private practice, because I was like, oh, wow, like other people are doing this, I can do this. And, you know, a lot of the resources that I found or the people I connected with on social media, a lot of people were from the States. And what I was noticing was that the states were farther ahead than us. And so I think I just would like to be able to make that more of a bigger thing here in Ottawa. The more I talk about pet loss and grief support with colleagues, and with different professionals from different community agencies in the area, it sounds like people think about it. I just don't think they know where to go for the information or if there's someone in the community doing it. And so they seem to be getting very energized by the conversation. I mean, my team, I have such an amazing team. We're all pet parents. And so it's so cool to chat about things human animal bond related because they get it. And they have the same heart and want to support their clients and understand a lot of the barriers that exist, the lack of resources. So I think it's on people's radar. I think we just have more work to do. I'm really hopeful that, in time, a lot of post-secondary institutions may kind of bring on board some of that animal-informed social work practice. Like, I'm really hopeful. I think it has a significant place in social work, and I think maybe it's just a matter of time.
I agree with you. Yeah, because you don't really think about it. You don't. I mean, even grief in general, as you're talking, I was thinking about it. Even grief in general, you don't really hear of a lot of services that help marginalized communities in terms of, yeah, you hear like, okay, so we're getting better on the mental health. We're not, we're real far away still. But we're getting better with the mental health situation with marginalized communities. But you don't hear anything like anything offered to them or anything that would even encompass grief in general, let alone grief in a companion animal setting, in a companion animal specific, thing.
Yeah, so in Ottawa, there's not a lot of grief support in general that's readily accessible, especially for marginalized populations. So, we have sliding scale counseling clinics, but the wait lists are extensive. When I think about pet loss, we do have I think a few pet loss groups, but groups aren't for everybody. I've supported a few folks on my caseload with pet loss, not necessarily through death, but surrendering. Like, I think that's something to be acknowledged too of what I'm seeing. It's not just about death, it's about surrendering as well. Or what about those animals that are outdoor, like outdoor cats, and they just don't come home? So I think it's a broad spectrum that I'm seeing and that I'd like to be able to support people with. But yes, I think marginalized pet owners are at a significant disadvantage. And I think there's a few charities out there that are doing amazing things, one of which that I have the privilege of being able to collaborate with in the fall and in the winter. And like I said, like they're providing, pro bono veterinary care and human health care because they recognize the importance and the value of that relationship, and they want to keep those animals with those pet parents.
Yeah, I brought it up before in a couple other episodes. Like, I was always interested. I see like, where you're going in your direction, but I was always interested as well. Like, if this might be a little bit embarrassing to talk about, but when Athena was sick, one of our biggest issues was finding out the funds to cover her health care. And then when they told us, like, hey, you need to put her down. She's not going to survive and she's suffering. I was like frantic in terms of like, how am I going to come up with the money to be able to euthanize and take her ashes and all that stuff? And I brought in a couple episodes that I always wanted to start like a nonprofit to cover that portion. But I was also looking at it in like my train of thought, like the way my experience was. I can't imagine being somebody that maybe homeless or not have somewhere to live, and they have their companion animal and they have passed, and not being able to afford the normal processes that come with with grief and memorializing and all of that, like how messed up that is, that you wouldn't even be able to have that as an option.
And so that was a big thing after Tika passed away. I realized how significant a position of privilege I was in to be able to give her last 11 months of living as healthy as she could. I mean, I think I was spending hundreds of dollars just on supplements from the States. Like I was consulting with, veterinary specialists in the States and getting supplements, and then I was going to a butcher and buying special meat, right? Because between kidney disease and inflammatory bowel disease, the diet was very limited. And so, sitting back and being able to reflect on what a privilege it was to be able to afford that. But then, like you said, to be able to afford the in-home euthanasia, to then, afford a private cremation, to afford a last visitation. Right, like what a privilege. And so that had me reflecting on, well, what do my clients do? And there's not a lot available. There are a few avenues that I can support people with, but it has to be planned. And so yeah, they are at a significant disadvantage of being able to experience the things that I got to experience. And that for me is a tough pill to swallow. I feel for them because I would love for everyone to be able to have experienced what I got to experience. And I know that's not the reality, and that's a problem.
Well, and a lot of times I feel like they go hand in hand. So how you're able to deal with a situation that is hard like that, and how getting the cremains or the ashes and having them with you. Like I'm one of those people where I know it's just their body, but they're still, that's like my physical representation of them. And
It's what's
so,
left.
yeah. So, for instance, we just moved. I know I talked about it a couple podcasts ago that we were in the process of moving, and I had this thing, and I told my husband, like, I know this sounds crazy, but this is gonna happen. We went and we picked up the other my three dogs that I have now over at our old house to bring them over to the new house, and I had Athena and Kaya and Gracie, our chinchilla's ashes. And I brought them with us when we brought the dogs. And I wanted all of us to walk in the house at the same time with them because it was like the only thing I have that's a physical representation of them. So, as somebody who lives in a marginalized society or someone maybe financially isn't doing well right now and they don't have that option, is like, that really it harms the grief process and the grief journey that you go through because you don't have that as a,
You don't
as
have the capacity.
that's so sad. When I like when you start talking about like, oh my gosh, that's because I've always wanted to, like I said, do a nonprofit where maybe we could like raise funds for people that we could give grants to or something for so that they can take the cremains or take, their ashes or whatever, they have left of them in terms of, helping with the grief process. It isn't going to change it, but I feel like it does help in some way. And so you're like, I think it's a really great and amazing thing that you're doing, that you're looking at it in terms of, wow, I was very fortunate. It almost kind of makes you rethink, like as you're talking, making me rethink my situation and my train of thought of this very horrific thing and turning it into, but I was fortunate that I was able to XYZ when other people aren't able to XYZ,
And
So.
I think, and I think, being in the field that I'm in, and supporting some folks with either surrendering or pet loss, I've had to really pivot. And yes, acknowledge that, you may not have been able to be there for their final moments. You may not have been able to have them cremated and receive their remains, right? And try and like acknowledge that, yes, and try and focus on other ways to kind of continue that relationship
Yes.
outside of that urn, right? And that's really hard. It's really hard to do that because you know that it's so meaningful for you to have been there for your animal's final moments, or to have that physical, urn, and they don't. And so I don't know, maybe there's room for a little nonprofit or a charity like that. I think that can do some really big things for people, because as I mean, we're taught when we grow up that like if you're not buried, you're cremated. And a lot of people, like for human loss, right? There is an urn. It's what we learn. And so to not have that for probably one of the most important beings in your life, that would be really hard.
I agree. But I like that you said continuing that bond, because it made a light bulb go off in my own head where I was like, continuing that bond. Wow, you are 100% right on that. You are 100% right on you want to continue that bond in whatever capacity you can. And whatever, I'm a shut down kind of person. So I don't know if it's like how I process things, but I tend to like don't want to remember good or bad memories. Don't want to remember any of it. And so that bond, I feel like, kind of goes away because it's a byproduct of me not wanting to think about it. But gosh, like, yeah, what isn't it? Why would I not want that bond to continue even if they're not here?
I mean, as a society, we struggle with experiencing difficult emotions, right? And we are, again, a society that likes to pretty it up as fast as possible and fix things. And so I think what you're describing is pretty normal, from what I've seen, right? Like it's really painful to lean into that stuff. And if we don't have a blueprint, or we don't have a reference point of how to lean into it and how to cope through it and journey with it, well, of course we're going to want to shut down because we don't know what to do with it. And so I hope, over time that narrative can change as well. Yeah, I think for me that continuing to talk about Tika and continuing to talk about Winston, posting memories on social media. Oh my gosh, anybody who goes onto my social media, all you see is stuff related to cats. So I'm like, I always get really embarrassed adding new people because I'm like, all you're gonna think is I'm a crazy cat lady. And I am, and I'm proud. But it really is about, I have photos of them in my place. They're both right behind me. I have their urns. I still, from time to time, will have conversations with them, which I'll be honest, I'm a little embarrassed about, and it's super helpful for me, so I can own it, right? I love when people bring up memories of Tika. Not a lot of people liked Tika. She was mean. People were terrified of her. She would lunge at people. But when they share memories, it feels so good. Or even when I cry, I'm like, oh, I still care. I'm always gonna care, but oh, this is great. And so, some of the things I still write to Tika, or I write to Winston, and those are the ways that I kind of keep them alive in my life.
I love that. Writing to them, that to me, there's just something, well, this is gonna sound stupid, but therapeutic. I I'm like,
Well,
that's exactly what you're talking about. So.
but and that's the thing, right? Like this morning I wrote and I was like, you're gonna be so proud of me. Guess what I'm doing today, right? Like, and it is therapeutic and it's healing for me. And so for some people, it might seem wacky, and that's okay. Like they're allowed to feel, to think and feel that way. For me, it works. And that's what I have to hold on to, is that's what works for me. And that's what's helped me survive some very devastating times, some very dark moments. And I'm okay with that.
Right. Well, and let's be real here. I would think, I would, think the same thing. But I mean, honestly, we don't know what happens after we're done. We don't know what happens when we're not here anymore. So they might be just, chilling somewhere, listening to us like, okay, you already told me the story, or, like, what's going on? We don't know. And so, yes, it's great for us, but also in other terms, like, we're catching them up. We're catching them up on what's going on so that when we meet again, maybe we can, talk about it.
It's quite possible. I mean, that's the
Listen,
hope.
I was just saying, that's my, like, I hope so much, and I try every day to convince myself that that's what's going to happen, but I think that's great. Well, on that note, do you want to tell us a funny story slash like your favorite memory of Tika and
Oh, Tika. Okay, so not maybe not a favorite, but it really speaks to her character. So when she was quite young, she really had that Jekyll and Hyde personality. And she always felt quite threatened when I would either be on the phone or I'd have, friends over. And so I had just gotten back from Florida with my best friend at the time. And while I was away, she started like starving herself. She wouldn't eat. So when I got back, I had to rush her to the vet, spent like a couple thousand trying to get her back on track and like just, yeah. So at the same time, I had had a new couch delivered, brand new couch. And so I'm sitting on the couch and I'm just, chatting with my best friend, and Tika strolls along like her fine self and decides, well, I'm gonna scratch this couch. And she's just going to town. And I'm like, Tika, I just saved your life and I just paid for a brand new couch. It would be awesome if you could just not do that. And it was like the spawn of Satan just came right over her in true Tika fashion, and out of nowhere just lunged at my face, and like nails got caught in my lip, and I was just like, oh my gosh. And we both just froze, and I like my face started to like pour blood. And but that was like what a that was the Tika personality that a lot of people came to like know. She had a hard time with people, especially men. And so, I can appreciate that aspect to her. She was spunky, she was spicy. I loved it. I didn't like the war wounds. But that story really is something that resonates with me in terms of like true Tika fashion.
That's awesome. I love it.
Yeah.
And I love that your story wasn't like a lot of people when they pass away, they do the whole like saint them. They make it,
Oh, heck no.
anymore like a saint. So I love that your story is like, yeah, no, she was wild.
Oh, she was a wild child, like total wild child. And so that was her. Winston was the saint. Winston was like the epitome of the kindest, gentlest, most loving animal. I used to call him my distinguished gentleman. And he was so caring. But Tika really was a combination of wild child and fiercely protective. She would sit on my shoulders. She would always love to be held like a baby. But she did have that spicy side when she wasn't getting enough attention or she had to compete. And so, I appreciated that side of her.
That's awesome. I love it so much. All
Yeah.
right. Well, So if you, I was gonna say, because we talked about this, her practice isn't up and running yet. But
Not
as I
yet.
do with all guests, I say in a year from now, we're gonna want to record another episode, checking in with you and checking in with everything. What would be your suggestion, like number one suggestion for someone anywhere in the world to maybe look into on possibly, I was to say, helping with the marginalized society and with in terms of that type of thing?
So I think the biggest takeaway for me, and the one biggest thing that I can always encourage people to do is come from a place of curiosity as opposed to judgment. You don't know people's circumstances. You don't know what brought them there. You don't know what kind of pet parent they are, but I can almost bet you they're an incredible pet parent. They will do anything and everything. And so before judgment, just come to the table with some curiosity, and ask questions, right? Ask about their relationship with their animal. You will see their face light up. They are so proud, and they're just so committed to providing a good life for their animal and for themselves in the capacity that they can.
Awesome. That's great
Yeah.
advice. I think that that can be applied for anybody that not maybe not even just companion animals, anybody that deals with the marginalized society and come in with more compassion than you would typically. So I think that's great and you're great and I'm excited to see what
Thanks.
you have in the future going on. And
Oh, stay tuned.
oh
I'm excited.
yes. Yeah, maybe I mean, if you have anything big happen and it's not the year, we're always open to having people on again. So whatever you want to do, you know me.
I would
Come
love that.
follow.
Yeah, I would
Yep.
love that.
Yep. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, and we will talk to you guys later.